Okay, I want to start with a story today. Anyone ever been away and had one of those moments where you meet somebody and they find out you're from Calgary and their first question is, hey, do you know so-and-so? Of course, and a million people, of course I know so-and-so, right? Me and a buddy of mine were driving dual sport bikes. Do you know what a dual sport bike is? It's like a dirt bike that you can ride on the road. You know? Love it. We'll go riding after. So we're riding from here to Merritt on what's called the Kettle Valley Railroad. The Kettle Valley Railroad is basically this railroad that they made from here to BC, Merritt, BC. And in the infinite wisdom of the BC government, and I swear to you, these people, whoever made this decision, should get like the Nobel Peace Prize. They took out all the tracks and left the whole trail open to motorbikes. So you can ride from basically Christina Lake to Merritt through these crazy passes, tunnels, over these bridges. It is beautiful. That's not what my message is about, but just remember Kettle Valley Railroad, right? So we're coming back and we stopped at a place called Silverton. Silverton, BC. Anyone been to Silverton, BC? No way. What in the world? Did you break down or what? Oh, she's a mining engineer, so that makes some sense, right? Oh, another one back there. I, on the other hand, had never been to Silverton, BC. This, like, we get to this edge of this kind of the road where our trail hits the road. We need some place to sleep. So someone points us out to the motel. Not a motel, the motel. So we roll in. You got to remember, we're riding dirt bikes in the middle of nowhere. We're covered in dirt. We smell like we haven't done personal grooming in a long time. And we hadn't. So we pull into this bar and walk in, and there's some rooms upstairs that, just to jump ahead in the story, the guy says, well, you can sleep in that room. It hasn't been cleaned yet, but you can sleep in that room. How about I don't share a bed with a complete stranger? How's that? That's just throwing it out there. So anyways, we walk in, the bartender turns around, and he's wearing a Jets jersey, Winnipeg Jets jersey. I'm a Manitoba boy, so my first question is, hey, where are you from? So he tells me, he says, where are you from? So since he's from Manitoba, I assume that, you know, normally people ask me where I'm from, I say Manitoba. He knows Manitoba, so I say, well, I'm from the town that I grew up in. It's called Morden. Morden, Manitoba. His first question is, hey, do you know? You know, internally my eyes are rolling. Now, I'm not doing it outside because I need to be able to find a place to sleep tonight, and he's the key holder to that, so... I'm not going to, you know, punch the face that feeds me here. So he says, do you know so... And as he's saying this, I'm thinking, can a Morden is this small town? 5,000 people. But still 5,000 people. I haven't lived there in 30 years. So when he says, do you know... I'm thinking, there's no way in hell that I'm going to know anyone. So he says, do you know David? I'm thinking, how many Davids have been through Morden in the last 30 years? He says, do you know David Swatsky? Yes, he was my next door neighbor and his mom taught me piano lessons for 7 years. Wow. Didn't see that coming, did I? And it's a ridiculous story. But I tell you because it highlights for me how small this world is. Here I am in this little town that only has a mine, and a motel, a sketchy motel, and I meet somebody who knew my next-door neighbor, in fact, my piano teacher that I spent pretty much every week with for 7 years of my life. Okay. I just want to play a game with you guys if you're willing. If you don't want to do this, just opt out. It's no big deal. But if you're open to it, I want you to try this with me. So I just want you to raise your hand if you know somebody or kind of are friends with somebody or have family that live in a certain area. Make sense? I have a friend named Dina. I met her in Bible school when I was 18. She lives in Edmonton. So anyone know anyone who lives in Edmonton? Just take a look around, folks. Just like, okay. Chantel, can you just go through the different places so I don't have to try and remember them? Okay, how about this? BC. My brother lives in Kimberley. He's got my nephew lives in Vancouver. BC, lots of people in BC. Prairie provinces. Yeah, my dad and my sister live in Winnipeg. How about Ontario, Quebec area? Isn't there another part after that? What is that? Where's Josh? There you are. He's giving me this like, screw you, Clausen. Anyone know anyone in the Maritimes? Wow, still a lot of people. How about continental USA? Oh, geez. Anyone know anyone in Alaska? Oh, wow. There's a lot of you. Okay, what do we got next on the list? Central America. Anyone know anyone in Central America? Okay. Jeez. Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course. South America. Okay, we're getting a little bit less, but still a lot of you. Wow. What do we got next? Western Europe. Okay, I'm surprised. There's a ton of you. Eastern Europe? Anyone? Anyone Eastern Europe? Still. You are a very connected man. Okay, what do we got? Oh, Asia. Anyone know anyone in Asia? Okay. Jeez. Africa. I have a friend who went to Bible school. I think he's in Africa still, so I'm going to put up my hand on this one. Oh, yeah? Family and friends over there? Good. How about Australia? Anyone remember April? She was on sabbatical right now. She works here. If you know April, you know someone in Australia right now. That girl. There's this idea popularized by a movie called Six Degrees of Separation. Anyone ever seen that movie? It's this idea that says the entire world is connected by six relationships. So, for example, I know Tanya, and Tanya knows somebody in Africa. So now her friend and I are connected by one, two relationships. It's interesting, isn't it? Of course, mathematicians got involved in this. They analyzed social media. They found it wasn't quite 6 degrees of separation, but it's pretty darn close. But the idea here is this. Just sitting next to somebody in this room, you know people from all over the world. I love the idea that instead of this being a far-flung world where we don't really know anyone, within a few relationships, I know you. You know somebody else, they know somebody else, and I can be connected to every single person in the entire world. From the lawyer in Manhattan, to the bushman in Papua New Guinea, to the person who is running a business in South Africa, to the small coffee farmer in Central America. Our world is small, isn't it? I like the idea that I can walk down the street, look at a stranger in the face and think, you know what, tomorrow at my friend's birthday party, I might be introduced to them because that's their friend. And instead of the world being a world of strangers, it's a world that's interconnected, deeply interconnected. And I just want you to put that concept on hold for just a second. I'm going to come back to it, but I want to tell you why I'm talking about the interconnectedness of this world. Let me start with this next story and say this. Anyone ever screwed up? Sorry, you shouldn't put your hands up. I'll put your hand up for all y'all, right? Today, this story is about a screw-up. The screw-up starts off by basically saying to his parent, I hope you die. I wish you were dead. Yeesh. Then they proceed to take money out of the family that really they shouldn't be getting. And they take off to Vegas and they blow it on gambling and drugs. Talk about a great start to the story, right? They start off by alienating their entire family, right? Telling your dad that your parent, you wish they were dead, not a good start. Blowing the money that you're given, not a great second piece. And I think the story is designed to be our story. You maybe didn't tell your parents you wish they were dead, though some of us may have to answer yes to that question. But what's your screw up? You fail a friend? Cheat on somebody? Blow money that you shouldn't have blown? Neglected your physical health, your emotional health, your spiritual health? You see, I think this story is actually supposed to be our story. And as I tell this story, I want you to think of where you screwed up and just bring that into the story. So here we have this young kid screwed up in whatever way we've screwed up. blown everything he's got. He's now destitute. There's a famine in the area, so he's living on nothing. And they think to themselves, you know, my life really sucks right now. I honestly thought that if I could just get away from my family, everything would be okay. I'd be happy, right? But man, this sucks. But they think my family has a business. And that business does pretty well. You know, maybe I could just go back and just not, like, I won't go back as the child. You know, I've burned too many bridges there. They're never going to have me back. But maybe I can go back as an employee. Maybe I'll be able to make enough money just to eat. And so the kid starts making the long journey home. The whole time rehearsing in their head, okay, you know I screwed up, and I'm sorry, and I don't want anything from you guys, and I know I don't deserve anything, but if you could just give me a job. Like, I don't even expect to be back in the family, but just if I could get some food. And as they're walking up the driveway to their family home, remembering, you know, all their memories, they grew up there, their family's there. At the same time, feeling the shame and the guilt of what they've done. They see their dad coming towards them down the driveway. Their first reaction is to stop and back up. Like, oh, this is not going to go well. And the dad starts running, and you can just see the kid like, ah. Finally, they just stop and kind of put their head down. Like, instead of the dad taking out all the crap that that kid gave to the parent, the dad grabs the kid, picks him up in a big bear hug, and says, I am so glad you're home. I thought I'd lost you. And since this is meant to be our story, just take a second and think of the person you've hurt, the person you let down, the person you've screwed up with. Imagine them grabbing you in a big bear hug and saying, I'm so glad you're here. What an incredible story, huh? I would be bawling my eyes out. To have someone see through all the crap. And, you know, even as we're trying to say those lines, hey, I'm not worthy, I just want to be your employee, blah, 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 whatever our line is, and they say, screw that, no. I love you. I'm so glad you're here. It's an incredible story. But you know what? The young kid has an older sibling. And their story is really different. You see, their story, they never left home. They never told their parent that they wished they were dead. In fact, this sibling did everything right. They went to the right school. They picked the right courses. They worked hard instead of partying. They took the career that everyone wanted them to. They've always done what everyone else wants them to do, and they're miserable. The first kid, the archetype, is the screw-up, right? The older sibling, the archetype is the victim. Now, the victim's interesting. We're all been hurt in our lives, right? That's completely legitimate. Where the victim comes in is the hurt that happened 10 years ago, they're still living out today. My parents weren't great parents, and they're my age, still trying to get their parents to atone for what they did when they were 5. And they can't live a full life because they're still the 5-year-old trying to figure out how to make their parents love them again. And see, this story, this is our story too, isn't it? We're the older sibling. When I was younger, I had this job and I worked really hard, and then, you know, someone's kid got the promotion instead of me. And now screw it. I'm not even going to work hard at my job anymore because someone else is just going to get it for me, right? Someone let us down. Someone broke our heart. And we're still living in those wounds years later. That's the victim. And the older sibling, they are fully in their victim. You see, while the young kid comes home, they throw a party, that welcome home party, like, hey, we thought you were dead. We got to celebrate. And while the party's going on over here, the older sibling's sitting over here. I'm not going in. Screw that. Finally, the dad comes out and says, what gives? We're celebrating that your sibling is finally home. They're not dead. And you won't even come in? What? Like what? The older sibling says, my entire life, I've done everything right. They screw up nonstop. I'm the one who's always here. I'm the one doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And you never even care. Not once have you celebrated what I did. Not once. And you just feel like this is a lifetime of hurt in this moment, saying, screw you, screw my younger partner, sibling, and screw all of you. I'm the wounded one here. Why aren't you paying attention to my pain? It's pretty uncomfortable to think of ourselves as the victim, isn't it? Or that we're playing that card. But we do. We live in the hurts from our past. We demand that we're treated differently because, but this happened to me, and or you did this, and I can't move past it. And really, we want people to just care. Now, I got to admit, I am horrible. When people pull the victim card, I am just horrible at it. My reaction is, suck it up. You know how well that works? Not well. So if you wanted like how not to handle those moments, think of Vince. But we do it, right? Anyone had one of those families where it's someone's like, essentially they say, I'm in pain, and your reaction is, yeah, but I'm in more pain, and then someone else's reaction, yeah, but I'm in more pain. And you play the game like who's the biggest victim, right? That goes really well, doesn't it? So here's the older sibling, meant to be us when we play that victim card. And the father doesn't ignore. He doesn't pull a Vince, just get over it already. No, he leaves the party and says, I want to come talk to you because your pain is important to me. And he walks out to the older sibling, says, hey, what's going on? Like, we want you in the party. And of course, you hear the sibling just throwing down the victim card. Yeah, but you've never, and this sucks, and they always screw up, and I've always been the, yeah. What about me? And the father, like, it's already ninja level enough that the father's come out, spent time, and the father just looks him in the eye and says this. Everything I have is yours. Everything I have is yours. That's how important you are to me. This is the person who's hurt you coming up to you and saying, I am so sorry for what I did. You know those words that you've been dying to hear from the person who hurt you, from the person who let you down, from the person who wasn't there when you needed them? Yeah, that's this part of the story. To come up to you and say, I should never have done that to you. Yes, We need to deal with what's going on for you before we can do anything else, because you're that important. Everything I have is yours. How do I help? How do I help you heal? Tell me. Wouldn't having more of loving father behaviors in our lives make our lives infinitely better? Wouldn't that be incredible? When we're the screw up, that the loving parent just comes and gives us a big hug and says, I don't care what you've done, I love you, and that's more important than anything. And when we're hurt and we're wounded and we're doing all those things off that card that we're playing, they say, no, I love you. Let's repair what we need to repair, because this relationship, it means everything to me. Tell me having more of that in this world would not make our world better. Now, traditionally, the story is kind of created such that we're either supposed to identify with the young kid or the older sibling, right? The screw-up or the archetype of victim. And usually, in the classic interpretation, the parent is a model of God. And really, if you're going to pick a model of God, a loving parent who's super skillful and loves you no matter what, tell me that's not a beautiful image of God, right? No wonder. Now, Jesus never says that this is a story about God. It's never said that the parent character, that's how you're supposed to think of God. Not at all. In fact, I think there's a deeper twist to the story. I think we're supposed to identify with the screw-up. I think we're supposed to identify with the victim. But I also think we're supposed to identify with the loving parent in the story, where we transcend all of our baggage, all of our wounding, all of our crap, and we now are skillful and loving with the people around us. Just think about the number of people in this room right now. What if we could all do that? This is the part where your partner's giving the other partner an elbow, like, you should totally be. It's not what I'm getting at. What if we could do this to each other, to our family, friends? Tell me that level of loving skill would not make this world a better place. Even in business. You know what? I did screw that up, and I'm so sorry. You're right to be upset with me. I was at a meeting recently for a long story. I won't go there, but the meeting was a bit contentious. I'd been asking for something for a year. They haven't been giving it to me. They owed it to me. I'm getting a little frustrated, right? One person comes in the whole time. She's like, oh, it's their fault, it's their fault, it's their fault, it's their fault, right? She's pointing at everyone. The other person comes in and says, Vince, I am so sorry we did this to you. Oh, thank you. It just changes everything. Now, I want you just to reflect on the story for a second. Put yourself in the parent's shoes for just a second, right? Your kid's looking you in the eye, the kid that you've loved, you've given everything for, you'll do anything for this. You'll take a bullet for this kid, and the kid's looking at you going, I hope you freaking die. Give me my money, and then they take off and blow it in Vegas on drugs and, gambling. 2 years later, you see them walk up the driveway. How much work would you need to have done in that 2 years to be able to run out to them and give them a big giant hug and say, I love you? Not you, ingrate little son of a... Think about the journey of the father. How many counseling appointments did he go to in the 2 years? Like me, he probably bought his counselor a new summer home. Like, you can just go to Vegas and then spend your new time in your new home because I bought it for you. Good. How many books were read? How many sessions were gone to? How many group therapies were dealt with? How much work would it take from going to be the younger son, the screw up, or the victim? How much work does it take to transcend all of that and turn around and now be able to be the loving person to the screw up and the victim. We call that personal work here. Jesus, I think, is saying, guys, yeah, there's times when you're the victim. It's okay. There's times when you're the screw up, yeah. But if you want to really live life, in fact, he says it this way. Can you throw it up there for me, Chantel? Those who try to keep their lives will lose it, but those who give their lives away will find life. He says, if you want to be the screw up and you want to be the victim all the time, you will not have a purposeful life. You'll have a life of selfishness, and it's all about me, and me, and why aren't they taking care of me, and why isn't this thing that I just bought making me feel good? We've all been there, right? We know that it doesn't work. But there's something when we transcend to the loving parent in our lives, right? And in moments of insane ninja-level skill, we've done so much work that we have this moment when instead of saying the thing that that person deserves, right? You told me go drop dead. They deserve a little like, well, screw you. And instead you go, no. I love you. I'm so glad you're here. What would it take for each one of us to go from where we are now? The hurts, and they're all legitimate, right? Where we are, it's legitimate. There's a reason why we're here. It's not made up. And yet still Jesus says, if you want to truly live life, if you want to change this world, transition to this side and say, how can I love this person? How can I heal them? Does that not blow your mind? And yet when you sit with that, that is the purpose of this journey. There's something there, isn't there? If I sat up here and said, hey, the purpose of the spiritual journey is to make sure that you have everything you want, would you all leave? Because I'd be like, screw you, Clausen, you liar, I'm out of here. And I think this story is designed to say, no, you want to see where to go? This is where you find life. Sure, you won't be there all the time. Sure, there's going to be times when you're going, this is too much. Sure, there's boundaries. There's all sorts of stuff in between. But in a long-term goal of this posture to the world, wouldn't that make this world a better place? To get from here, the victim, screw up, to the loving parent, that's personal work. Every once in a while, people say to me, hey, Vince, isn't that pop psychology? My answer is, I don't know. But if it gets me from here to here, I think it's profoundly spiritual. Profoundly spiritual. I wonder what it would take for us to do our personal work. What thing we would need to try, where we need to go, who we need to see, what we need to be open to. What's your story? What do you need to go from there to here? I started this whole message with my story about, do you know David Sawatsky? Of course. His mom taught me piano lessons my whole life. You see, the reason I told you that story and then the second story is I said this. If we could be the loving parent to the people we're in relationship with, think about what happens in their life. Right? I get mad at you, Robin, and I start yelling at you. What do you do to Kathy when you get home, right? Hey, it's Jesus in the crowd today, folks. Woo! You're a better man than I am. Right? We can see it spill out. Like, we barf into one person, they barf into the next person. It's just this, like, whole barf fest. And when you think of it, 6 degrees of separation, our emotional crap our pain that we don't deal with, the stuff where we're as the victim of the mentality, it is going through relationship after relationship and has the potential to hit the entire world. Or we can do our work and we can use the same mechanism to bring love and push it through our entire world, right? I love somebody. They love the person they know. They love the person they know. Someone asked me the other day, "Hey, Vince, what's your church all about?" And so I hope it's okay that I answered for y'all. I said, "We're changing the world." They gave me a little look, and I was like, "No, we're seriously making this world a better place." We called this series Anthem. I'm going to play a little bit of music because this one moves me. We called this series Anthem for a reason. Because an anthem has power, doesn't it? You go to watch the Olympics on TV, someone wins a gold medal, they're from Canada, they put on old Canada, and suddenly you're all kind of like, we're standing up, you know? It moves us. For me, I have a whole playlist that I call Anthem. It's songs that fire me up. When I'm kind of in the dumps and I'm like not motivated and I want to go and go hard, I crank up songs like this. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, let's go, let's do this. On the way to snowboard trips when I was a kid, we used to do that driving up the hill, right? At that point, it was Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, but tomato, tomato, really, right? Got me fired up. I was ready to ride hard for the rest of the day. I want you guys to think of this message as an anthem. When you're busy with life and stuff that's going on, your schedule's insane, all the stuff that's holding you back, when you can't get out of bed because the wounds that you've had in your life are so painful, and you're just going, I can't get out of me, I want you to remember this message. There's a purpose found in living life differently, I think, if we're willing to do our personal work. So if you want to know what the heart of Friends Church is, this is Friends Church. And we'll promise you right here, I will put up my hand and promise you, this next year I will push you in every way I can. I will push myself. I'll push myself harder than I push you. I will motivate. I will educate. We'll challenge. We'll call out. We'll do everything we can to help us do that personal work. Why? Not to make our lives better. Although, of course, it will. It's not about us. When we can live as a loving parent, we change the world. And today I want to invite you to change the world. Next week, Jeff's going to talk about the playground in which you change the world. It's about us. I don't want you guys to miss that one. Have a great week. Don't run off. Hang out. Visit. See you guys next week.